This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Oh, no. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Election season is heating up, and it looks like some of the campaigns are going to be nasty. As a matter of fact, some are already kind of nasty. As we have mentioned before, a third-party lobby group called Engage Canada, which is funded by unions, has been running an ad targeting Conservative leader Andrew Scheer. And they spent lots of money to run it on TV during the NBA finals, and the campaign is called Sheer Weakness.
He's a yes man to the 1%. He'd say yes to tax cuts for the richest Canadians. And big business? He'd say yes to their tax cuts too. Following Doug Ford with conservative health care cuts? Hell yes. Sheer's a yes man to them, and that means no to you.
Okay, so that was it, trying to tie Andrew Scheer to Doug Ford. And meanwhile, the latest poll does not look good for any of the party leaders except Elizabeth May of the Green Party. The leaders of the three major political parties have net disapproval ratings. Justin Trudeau, for instance, has a net disapproval of 56%. Andrew Scheer, 45%, and 40% disapprove of Jagmeet Singh. Meanwhile, that's from Forum Research. Campaign Research also has a poll with good news for the Green Party showing that they're in a statistical tie with the NDP. So what does it all mean? What do you think of it? Do you like those negative ads? Do you think they're effective? The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. And right now, I'd like to bring in William Shatton, who is the Vice President of Research and Analytics at Forum Research, and Richard Chano, who is a principal at Campaign Research and former president of PC Ontario. Welcome. Thank you both for being with us.
Pleasure. Thanks, Libby. Hi.
Okay, let's start with Richard. How effective do you think those anti-Scheer ads are?
Well, I mean, specifically, I guess there's the two I saw watching Raptures the other night, the Engage Canada one, where they're flicking the bobblehead, I guess, is the theme of it there. I would say, look, on the one hand, it's effective insofar as, you know, I think if you make attack ads that the tone of which is too dire and negative, you know, people are quicker to tune it out and sort of, you know, want to not really like it much, let's say, or be interested in it. They have a kind of lighthearted feel because of the flicking the bobblehead, I guess, on that side. Okay, that's a positive for the ads. On the other side, you know, when you're trying to do the sort of guilt by association attack, I have a hard time. I mean, look, we're in June of an election that's going to culminate in October. I have a hard time believing that by the time all is said and done, when we get to October, the attack line that's going to be effective for sort of pro-liberal, call it forces, let's call it for what it is going to be, you know, the guilt by association of Doug Ford. I think it's more likely that the sort of national issues and the national narrative is going to come to the fore by then, and the issues that are at stake, countrywide. Attack ads definitely work. I mean, people say on the surface they don't like them, but they do remember them and they remember the attack lines. I'm not sure that the sort of guilt by association line of tying Scheer to Ford is ultimately going to be that substantial in the equation by the time we reach Election Day.
William Shatton, were you surprised that all of the three major leaders had net disapproval ratings?
Yeah, no, it's not a surprise. We've been seeing this for quite a while, especially with Trudeau. Right now, people don't really know Andrew Scheer. He hasn't been the leader for that long. The campaign period hasn't really started. So that's why his ads, the official Conservative Party ads, are really kind of get to know Andrew Scheer, try and portray him as this relatable, middle-class, everyday person's politician. So it's, you know, it's still kind of early days, and the same story is even more true for Jagmeet Singh. Whereas Elizabeth May has the highest approval rating of all the leaders, and we're seeing that the Greens are really kind of capitalizing on this, capitalizing on environmental issues, and are really growing their support base right now, which is only for the detriment of the Liberals. So a lot of disenfranchised environmentalists are shifting away from where they would have been previously voting Liberal to now are supporting the Greens in historical numbers right now.
Richard, how do you see this a strong showing for Elizabeth May? Does it perhaps have anything to do with the fact that she's very unlikely to be the next prime minister?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd add to what William said. It's to the detriment of the Liberals, also to the detriment of the NDP as well. And I think some of that, I mean, they're definitely, the Greens seem to be at a bit of a high watermark here in terms of support. We have in the past seen that the Greens perform better in pre-election polls than they actually do at the polls in the election, where the national narrative kind of takes over and they tend to get left behind. So there's definitely some new strength there. Whether it'll hold through election day remains to be seen, and it certainly is going to have an effect on both the Liberals and the NDP in terms of a bit of a downdraft in their potential support.
Well, your recent poll shows them in a statistical tie with the NDP, and
yes.
I have not heard many good things about Jagmeet Singh. He seems to have made almost no impression at all.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's true. I mean, we haven't really seen any strength there since his election as leader, really, and that does seem to be having left-leaning and environmental-minded voters looking at the Green Party in bigger numbers, and it was to their benefit in the Nanaimo Ladysmith by-election there, where they were able to get their historic second seat and high water mark in terms of seats in Parliament. And then, of course, they were also very competitive in the PEI provincial election as well, at a level that hasn't been seen before, where they formed the official opposition. So it does seem to be, I think it is a combination of weakness in the NDP that is driving some of this interest in the Green Party.
William Shatton, do you see this as a bigger threat for the NDP or for the Liberals? And is it just good news for the Conservatives if people leave the larger parties for the Green Party kind of in equal or in numbers, you know, from both those parties?
Yeah, absolutely. So like Richard said, though, you do tend to see these kind of swells, not as high as this, but you do see these swells for the Green prior to election day. What happens around election day is potentially the option for strategic voting, where maybe supporters of the Green Party recognize that their candidate might not win, so they actually cast their ballot for a different party who has a higher chance of winning, that aligns with closer to their values. So right now, yes, the vote is kind of being split between three parties on the left, and the Conservatives only benefit from that structure. But as it gets closer to election day, people may start voting or tend to vote strategically as opposed to who they actually support. And again, that falls back on one of the campaign promises that Trudeau didn't deliver on, where he was kind of opening up electoral reform as a potential issue to review and change, but that fell through. So the current system just benefits, the first-past-the-post system benefits the winner-take-all approach.
Let's take a call from William in Toronto. Hi, William.
Hello, Lib. I'm a lifelong Big C conservative. I have my standards and my values and my ethics, and there's no way I can vote for my own party. There's a lot of New World Order rot that has infiltrated and a lot of fake conservatives, and I can see it, and I can't vote for them. Maxime Bernier had 50% of the vote. He just got kicked out. He just got he did not get elected because of a few dairy farmers, and that's how Andrew Scheer got in. Maxime Bernier of the People's Party of Canada is the only person and the only real conservative that's capable and qualified to be Prime Minister of Canada. I'm very happy that the poll says that
Canadians are not satisfied with any of the leaders. And these attack ads, I don't like attack ads, but these attack ads on Andrew Scheer are truthful.
Okay, William, we'll run that by our panel. Thanks very much. I haven't even seen Maxime Bernier mentioned in any of your surveys. Richard?
Well, that's because he's not really on the map. I mean, we've included the People's Party in our research, and he just has fallen off. There's really been little national interest in Maxime Bernier or the People's Party.
William, is that what you're finding?
Yeah, same on our end. So there's very low single-digit support. He hasn't really kind of picked up any ground, not projected to win any seats. We are monitoring it, but he's not really gaining any traction right now. But this, your last caller kind of speaks to why these attack ads are important right now. You know, he sounds like he's a little disenfranchised with Doug Ford. And connecting Doug Ford with Andrew Scheer is an effective strategy right now in Ontario. Ontario is very vote-rich. So perhaps this may not have an impact come October, especially since the provincial government has taken this recess now until after the election. A lot of speculation that Andrew Scheer kind of leaned on Doug Ford to stay out of the spotlight until after the election because they recognize that Ontarians are not super happy with Doug Ford right now. And it is very easy for the left to paint this portrait that Andrew Scheer is the yes man or is very similar to Doug Ford. So maybe by the time election rolls around, this connection with Andrew Scheer and Doug Ford won't play such a role. But right now, it is having an impact on the vote predictions.
And Richard, do you think that it's a good strategy?
Well, again, I understand William's saying, and he's right insofar as the clearly, you know, the Doug Ford PCs are in the first year, have just come out of the first year of their mandate. They've done some unpopular things. Again, not unusual for the governments try and get that stuff going and out of the way early on in a mandate. And it does have some splash effect on Andrew Scheer. Again, though, I just go back to, I find it very unlikely given the high profile of national issues. And you have to remember that the generally speaking 10 or 15% more Canadians vote in federal elections than do in provincial elections. Historically, there is more interest in national issues, the national sort of narrative and discussion. I find it hard to believe that leading into October 21st, this kind of guilt by association approach saying, oh, Andrew Scheer is not going to stand up to Doug Ford or is Doug Ford's yes man. I just don't think it's likely that's going to be the ballot question for most people going to the polls. I think it only, if any reach at all that it has, it's only in Ontario, which granted is a significant battleground. But moreover, again, I don't think it's going to be what's going to be driving people's thinking as they head into the polls in October.
Now, the Toronto Star has a story about a, quote, exclusive interview with Andrew Scheer where he is insisting that he is his own man, and they run the word own in brackets. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know, I'm not sure this is the kind of coverage that's going to make him look strong. Is this whole tack a successful tack, Richard Ciano?
Again, I think he has got to rely on the fact and emphasize the contrast with Justin Trudeau. If Andrew Scheer is allowing himself to sort of be distracted by conversations about the Ontario PC government, Doug Ford, etc., that's not where he wants to be. He wants to have his focus on. And to make his case about Justin Trudeau as prime minister and the many failings that he wants to discuss and sees there on SNC-Lavalin, William mentioned electoral reform on all the various issues on pipelines and so forth, so in carbon tax, etc. So that's really where he wants to keep the focus and really to sort of treat any of these discussions about his connection to one or other premier, et cetera, is very much on the back burner.
And there are some observers who say that they think that the bleeding that Justin Trudeau has been suffering has been stopped, that he's kind of getting back into it. I'm wondering, do you see it that way? He's had a lot of bad news, probably starting with that India trip. Not been a very good, you know, the last year for Justin Trudeau. William Shatton, do you see any sign that he's recovering from that?
Yeah, so, I mean, his popularity did drop substantially at the beginning of 2019, obviously with the SNC-Lavalin issue and then his two cabinet ministers resigning. And that has sort of dropped out of the news cycle. People are kind of forgetting about it, moving on. So we are seeing slightly increased support for the Liberal Party now that that issue has kind of subsided. So they are gaining a little bit. And then it'll be very interesting to go into the actual campaign period. Justin Trudeau did a very good job campaigning last election. So it'll be interesting to see how he does this year. Some of his major talking points have maybe been taken away from him due to the SNC-Lavalin issue with Jody Wilson-Raybould resigning. So it'll be interesting to see how he portrays himself during this campaign period and if he's able to kind of win back some of that approval from Canadians that's really missing right now.
Richard, Trudeau's approval rating is just 34%, and the line of the Conservatives is not as advertised. He's not the guy he says he is. Is that a good tack to take to continue with?
Well, I think, the ad and the discussions that I've seen have been around, you know, broken things, broken promises, things that he, you know, said he would deliver. And William's right. The Liberals ran a good retail campaign last time. Well, unfortunately, what that means is they promised things in hindsight that they haven't been able to deliver on. I think there is some traction, particularly, again, this, you know, the new tone. It's parties get a little bit sucked into the, you know, we're going to be different, accountability, welcome all voices. And then you run into a thing like SNC-Lavalin where you're firing and turfing out of your party high profile and popular women cabinet ministers. Right. So there's definitely been damage to the brand, as William sort of pointed out, you know, that they're definitely I don't know if there's been a recovery yet. I'm not sure that we've seen that. You know, when folks have a decline in their favorability and in their numbers, it tends to be kind of a step ladder type of thing. So obviously, January and the breaking of the whole SNC-Lavalin issue, you know, kind of touched off the current downdraft that the Liberals went into. And yes, it does seem to have hit a bit of a floor there now, and that it isn't continuing down. But it's gone from being in January a much less competitive sort of national campaign to being one that is clearly very competitive with between the Liberals and the Conservatives. So it's a different. We're at the stage now where the campaign is really going to matter, and what plays out over these next several months leading to October 21st are really going to matter.
Well, you know, interesting, just today we had Eric Hoskins release his report on PharmaCare. I think we're all expecting that's going to be a keystone of the Liberal campaign. We have to see how important that is.
Yes, absolutely. And again, they're going to, the difference between this campaign for the Liberals and the last one is whereas last campaign, I think they were taken more or less at face value that they were going to deliver on the things that they promised. They're going to have a little, they can promise a lot more this campaign, but I think people are going to be looking at it with a more skeptical eye given a lot of the lack of sort of tick boxes from the campaigns from the last election.
William, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also see that, the Liberals are trying right now to earn back some of these environmental voters as well, right, with the recent kind of announcement about banning single-use plastics well. So I think they're really trying to examine policy issues that they can look to do as much as they can in the next few months that are around national policies that play to their strengths and can potentially improve their chances in the October election.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but that is something to explore, is how big a role will environmental issues play in the next election? If we could wrap up with that pretty quickly, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with William there. I think that is, again, a play not unlike in Ontario, the way the Dalton McGuinty and Kathleen Wynne government, you know, they know, the Liberals know they've taken some hit to their national brand and their leaders' favorability across the country with SNC-Lavalin, et cetera. They're going to be trying to keep those left-of-center votes is very much going to be a high priority for them, to not see those left-of-center votes spread out to the NDP and Greens. And so exactly why they're going to be looking at sort of big, noisy announcements that draw attention, things like a single-use plastic ban and so on. Again, practicality, whether actually you're going to deliver, you know, where that's going to be, that's a different story entirely. But those are the kinds of noises they're going to try and make to try and keep the NDP and the Greens on the mat.
Okay, and William, I'll give you the last 20 seconds.
Yeah, I agree with Richard. And I also will be interesting to see whether they use the last couple of weeks here of the legislation to pass the bilateral or trilateral trade agreement as well with the U.S. and Mexico, which would make a big splash and be a nice feather in the cap for Trudeau.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.